Regis. Good morning, all. Welcome to our first historical Par Valley Healthcare District Hospital Corporation Finance Committee meeting. Today is December 27th. It is 12 p.m. We are starting the meeting a little bit late. My apologies at 12:05. We have the agenda packet that was posted online at our meeting website, pvhcc.org, and that was posted online and noticed our meeting as December 28th or December 27th at noon. Our materials are online. Are there, just checking in with our staff, are there any changes to the agenda as was presented or in a material packet?
No.
Great. So we will call our meeting to order. Roll call.
Prio?
Here.
Pimentel?
Here. And that's us. And staff present today, we have Julie Peterson as our hospital CFO and Cecilia Montablo hanging on as our interim support. Cecilia, what is your, do you have an official new title or just?
Hanger honor,
all right. Great. And Renee, I know you were instrumental in our whole survival process. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Maybe we start with, before we go to public comment, if we could start with staff introductions for any of those who may be attending today so they understand who is. So our board, our finance committee consists of two of our board members, myself, Marcus Pimentel, as the treasurer of the hospital corporation and hospital district. I am the chair of the hospital finance committee meeting. I also have John Frill, who's the chair of our hospital district and our hospital board. Julie, would you mind introducing yourself and then Cecilia and Renee?
Hi, I'm Julie Peterson and I am the new chief financial officer here at Watsonville Hospital. I'm on week 4.
Great, thank you, Julie. Welcome.
Cecilia? Wow. I'm Cecilia Montalvo. I'm a consultant to the hospital. And happy to have Julie here. I also see that we have, Renee could introduce herself. I see Lucia. I'm not sure who else.
I can't see.
I can see Lucia, but she's joined as an attendee, so I don't know if she can talk.
Do you want me to bring her as a panelist?
I think it would be good just in case we have a question. She was working very, very hard on this budget. Renee, do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Thanks, Cecilia. This is Renee Alvarano. I am also a consultant with the hospital, worked with the hospital through the bankruptcy process and have been lucky enough to stay behind as we start in the new entity moving forward. So very, very blessed to be. Thank you all.
Thank you, Renee.
Lucia, do you want to introduce yourself?
There she is. Lucia, you're on mute.
Well, I could do the introduction for Lucia. Sure. Lucia D is our finance manager here at Watsonville Hospital. And as Cecilia mentioned, she has been instrumental in helping us pull together data and get this budget pulled together.
Great. Thank
Very
you.
Thankful for her.
So now we'll move into our public comment. This time is set aside for members of the general public to address the committee on any item not on the agenda. We limit time to 2 minutes and ask that all items are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the committee. No action or discussion shall be taken on any item presented except that any committee members may respond to statements made or questions asked or may ask questions for clarification. All matters of an administrative nature will be referred to staff. All matters relating to the committee will be noted in the minutes and may be scheduled for discussion at a future meeting or referred to staff for clarification and report. Do we have any public comment?
And if you want to speak, please raise the icon hand. And also if you're on the phone, please press star 9. No one has raised their hand.
Okay. Then we'll go on to our regular agenda. Item 2A, consideration of acceptance of financial performance of September through November 2022. We have an oral report by staff.
Please let me know when you want me to start the presentation and also when you you want me to move to different slides.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Beatrice. Let's go ahead and start the financial performance presentation. Yes, I can see it. Thank you. If you can go to the next slide, please.
Not advancing?
Not yet.
Sorry, I'm working with your computer. Okay, there.
Thank you. So put together this presentation just of 5 or 6 slides to go through the financial performance from September through November, just to give you a view at a very high level of how the hospital has been performing. And I'll do most of my focus on the month of November, as that's our most recent month closed. So what you're gonna see right off the top is that in November, our net revenue was down. And as you see the bottom line on this screen of a negative $1 million EBITDA, the net revenue is going to be the primary driver of November's performance. I have another slide where I'm going to highlight some of the various categories. So here is just to show you the numbers, basically, that we were down for the month in labor. We've been doing pretty good reducing some registry expense, but we also had a one-time reduction in our liabilities on benefits as a new actuarial study had been performed and allowed us to reduce some of the liability on our incurred but not received claims. We had some reduction in pro fee medical related to some better collections by our anesthesia group and less use of locums. And generally everything else was roughly, flat month over month. So it left us with an EBITDA shortfall for the month of $1,088,000. And then after layering on the MPT lease of almost $400,000, a net cash shortfall of $1.4 million for the month. If we could go to the next slide, please. So here's some other highlights. Wanted to touch on the fact I mentioned that net revenue was down. One of the things we did see is that our inpatient volume was down, as well as our acuity for the month of November. And when I went back and looked at 2021, similar occurrence in 2021. I'm used to seeing that a lot of times around the holidays that, things can slow down a little bit before Thanksgiving. And we did see that on the inpatient side. We really did not see that on the outpatient side. We actually had a pretty strong outpatient month with higher outpatient visits, higher ED visits, and higher outpatient surgeries. So a little bit, the outpatient volume per se kind of outdid itself while the inpatient was lower, but the net revenue collection percentage was lower than we wanted it to be. And we're actually doing some further review on it just to make sure that we've valued the AR appropriately. On the salary side, we've been doing a lot of work to reduce registry usage where we can. Obviously, we bring in registry when we don't have enough of our own staff to cover the volume. So we did see a reduction in registry hours from the prior month. on our professional fees, as I mentioned before, they were down about $100,000, and that was primarily due to better collections of our anesthesia group and less dollars spent on the locums. We did see an uptick in supply expense, COVID supplies, lab supplies, drugs, all went up. And the utilities was up significantly. And I think this tends to be something we're all seeing in our home lives as well as at work, where utility prices have really jumped. They've really skyrocketed when you look at this compared to last year as well. In the repairs and maintenance section, there were some catch-up expenses as we had some annual maintenance contracts signed, and we wanted to catch up for the prior months that were part of the period of that contract. And then we did have a one-time expense in purchase services of about $300,000 for the election fees that we only see on election years. Next slide, please. So just want to show you the statistics behind the numbers a little bit. As you can see, the admissions in November were down closer to the September range. But discharges generally have stayed, you know, fairly flat, averaging almost 10 discharges a day. Our patient days were down, which, you know, translates to a lower average daily census, as well as our length of stay being slightly below prior months. But you see it in the acute case mix or the acuity. And I think primarily this lower case mix of 1.3 would be driven when you're seeing lower inpatient surgeries and lower lower cases in the inpatient. And you can see at the bottom, the inpatient surgeries were down significantly from October. And then deliveries have stayed relatively flat. Next slide, please. Outpatient, as I mentioned, outpatient volumes were up. So you can see that in the outpatient visits, the ED visits, and the outpatient surgeries, all up quite significantly. Our ED has had tremendous volume and really done a great job of, you know, trying to keep the flow moving in a very busy ED these days. And then endoscopies is down a little bit. Again, probably not so surprising when you're going into a month that has a holiday in the middle of it. Next slide, please. Just grabbed a couple of key performance indicators. As I'm getting my feet wet and getting used to things, I'm trying to look at some of the different metrics and get a good feel for how things are flowing and where some of our opportunities are. So you can see our collectible patient revenue is about 13%. And as I mentioned, we're doing some analysis on that because the October number, which was up based on looking at the zero balance accounts, we're trying to kind of, you know, understand what that blip was about and have we valued November appropriately? And that's something we plan to have done before we close out the year and the month of December. you can see that our total net revenue is falling short of what our operating expense per adjusted patient day is. And I'm using the adjusted patient day metric as a way to get a sense of our current performance, but also as it's a key indicator that was used in the build of the budget that we're going to go over next. And so generally this just shows that, you know, when I add in that lease payment of that adds about $130 per adjusted patient day, we really have a shortfall of $492 per adjusted patient day. And that's really where our opportunity is in improving our net revenue and continuing to control our expenses. Next slide, please. Wanted to give just a quick look at the payer mix. You know, basically fairly stable, same payer mix month over month. 86.5% Medicare, Medi-Cal in November. About 85% over the 3 month period. We did see in November, you can see in these 3 months, a slide of September to November, that Medicare has been growing slightly each month. And, you know, on the commercial, we're commercial meaning HMO, PPO, Blue Cross, we're seeing about 8% in total.
Julie, this is John. Can I ask a quick question at this juncture?
Sure.
Yeah. Are we on a prospective payment system with Medicare? In other words, we're getting
yes.
money in regularly for them?
Yes. Yes. We get paid, you know, generally, you know, Medicare will pay about every 14 days. So they're fairly regular. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's my last slide in the finance. Just wanted to give you a flavor of what I've been able to put my hands on and see in the first 3 weeks of my tenure here. And I'll open it up for any other questions.
This is John again. I didn't do calculation. Days cash on hand using whatever formula you use, what does that come out to? I noticed we had $3 million. You have that number?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. I have not calculated that. So I'd have to calculate that.
If you wouldn't mind, and if the rest of the committee concurred, that would be a nice indicator that I particularly would like to track every month if you could.
Okay, yeah, we can definitely add that.
Full agree with that. Thank you, John.
Yeah, that was a great
app. So Julie, is it safe to say that we're more like September and November than October? October, right? Now that 3 month perspective, October ended with a positive EBITDA, but September and November were 700 and a million negative.
You know, a little bit hard for me to answer, having come in December yeah. and kind of on the tail end of October closing and understanding that in October there was some net revenue improvement in the valuation of AR. And I think with that AR question still outstanding, I'll see.
Just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just, it'll be good for us to get more months under our belt because with just three, what I would say is that I can look at each of those months and give you an explanation mm-hmm. for why the numbers are the way they are. But that's always kind of true. You know, you always look at, but I do think that the story of November is the volume, is the inpatient volume. And what I can also tell you is that during December, it's been quite robust. So December should be an interesting month. And as Julie will present in the budget for next year, you know, the other thing we have going on is that while we've done a terrific job negotiating new contracts, by and large, they have not taken effect. They'll begin taking effect. And so, you know, we aren't too far off, I think, where Renee, you know, on a cash basis, there are a couple things that have hit. The Medi-Cal program, the DHCS, has recovered certain overpayments from us, and that also depleted cash. So there's just been some cash flow things, both positive and negative. I think, yeah, I'm droning on and on, but I really do think December is going to be an improvement. It'll probably look a little bit more like, depending on what happens with AR, look more like October.
So this is John again. This is maybe a question for both Cecilia and Julia. How long can we sustain these losses, absorb them, that is, and where's that money coming from until we do get a better picture? And I don't mean that in a negative way. I want to congratulate you for the work that you've done, but we do have to keep our eye on the ball. For how long can we sustain $1 million, $2 million loss each month?
Well, you can't for very long at $1 million, $2 million. I think where we had wanted to be on a cash basis was to be a couple $100,000 negative in the early part of the year and turning cash positive by the end of next fiscal year. And if we can maintain our losses at that lower level, I think we have enough cash. We did not, our high point of cash, Renee knows, is probably about $13 million in the bank that we had 4 weeks ago. for a variety of reasons that has come way down. I don't know what it is today, but we're running close.
Okay. Well, I know we're all concerned about it, including staff, and so we'll all be watching it. So you can anticipate that question. And again, you know, congratulations on the work that you are doing to make that come down. But it's a concern that I have, and I suspect Marcus and the rest of the board members share it as well.
Mm-hmm. Really, really look forward to getting our arms around collections. I think that's a big part of the story.
Yeah.
And Cecilia and Julie, I'll admit my disadvantage on the KPIs. I love them. Where I'm struggling is, they're interesting, but what should be our target? Where's the industry at? Give me some point of reference of where are we doing good and where are we really concerned at? And maybe that could just be an oral review, but it'd be helpful in the future to think about having some type of industry marker or target of where you want these KPIs to be. So I have a sense of, you know, is 14% good or bad? You know, and right now I'm struggling with a few of them to really understand what they're telling me.
I think as I get more time under my belt, I will tend to probably move more things into like trended graph views, because I think they tell a better story. And, you know, generally, like when I'm showing the net revenue per adjusted patient day versus cost per adjusted patient day is just, you know, we all know the story works when net revenue's greater than cost. And so I like to, you know, eventually show that picture. You know, starting out the year, our targets will be based on the budget that we're set. And, you know, things like net revenue per adjusted patient day are not as easy ones to kind of do industry benchmarks. I mean, you can get them, but there's so many factors in terms of size of hospital, payer mix, you know, location. So, I think it's a good thing, though, as we start to pull things together to figure out where an industry benchmark makes sense and where, at least comparing it to what we budgeted and said we thought we were going to be able to do. And then also when we differ from that, the explanations to understand is the difference, something we saw coming or was an unexpected blip. So definitely we'll work on that, because I do want the metrics and things to, you know, kind of be actionable, make sense, you know, so.
Great. And on, like, the one in particular that I'm looking at, collectible patient revenue percent. It went from 13.7 to 15.4, it averaged 14%. And I don't have a sense of, is that good or bad? That's a particular one that I'm looking at.
You know, Marcus, I'm sure Julie could probably reflect on this as well. She's worked in a number of hospitals. It having a benchmark for that is a little tough, because it's so dependent on your unique situation. Mm-hmm. Like, how high are your charges today? You know, our charges must be relatively high. And we also have this disproportionate share of the business is government payers, right? So that's going to drag that percentage way down. Whereas if you compared it to a hospital next door that had a different payer mix, it's going to be different again. So I really agree with Julie that on some of these numbers, the best way to kind of measure is to look at it, the same hospital trended over time. So if you start seeing that number go up, you're kind of like, okay, it's, you know, we're collecting more. That's probably the way to look at that one.
And there's another metric that deals with looking at your net revenue, your collections as a percent of your net revenue, and it should always be around 100%. So as you're trending that month over month, if you see that starting to drag into the 90s, you know, then you can say, do I have a problem here? I see it fluctuate, you know, some months, because some months you'll have some extra pickup and it'll be, you know, 108%. But, you know, generally speaking, it should be pretty tight around the 100% mark, or you know that something is growing in your kind of outstanding AR. I did meet last week with the RevCycle team from Guidehouse, just to start talking about what can you be looking at in our collections to give us a little better purview into where we have opportunities and where things maybe have slipped up a little bit. You know, we know that anytime there's any kind of staffing shortages or things that you can just fall a little bit behind in your DNFB, discharge not final build. And of course, just having a holiday week, we saw that just, you know, it'll climb from last Friday to today, and then we'll work it down by, you know, this Friday, and then it'll climb again because of another holiday. But then, you know, we'll work it back down, and we know we have some opportunities there.
And I'll go back to echoing John's sentiment. I really appreciate this level of detail for our first Finance Committee meeting. I wasn't sure what to expect in the agenda packet, and this is really, I appreciate it, so thank you.
Yeah, I'd just like to add, I can tell you hit the road running because the bookcase behind you has nothing in it yet. You've been working pretty hard.
Actually, it was full of some really old stuff.
Oh, you got rid of them. Yeah, I managed to get rid of those.
Just haven't moved the bookshelf yet. I'm kind of hoping not to fill it up with binders because I like to keep most of the stuff electronic. All right. Well, if there's no more questions.
Yeah, I think we go on to our second agenda item two, which is our 2023 budget approval.
All right. Very good. If we can get that presentation up.
And for clarifications, are we talking the remaining 6 months of, is it January through June? Or what is the time period for?
For the budget?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I've done for the budget is try to prepare an annual budget, but really with the intention of probably quarterly refreshes this year. And I'll talk to you a little bit about how we put the budget together for this first pass, and then, you know, kind of show you what it we think it kind of going to roll out as of today's view, what it might roll out quarter over quarter, but also thinking again, you know, by March coming back and going, okay, well, sure. How did we really do on the first quarter and how might we adjust from there?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. So are we able to bring that one?
I think this is the correct one. Yeah. That's it.
Perfect. That's it. So if you could go on to the next slide, please.
Hold on. It's on top of my. Okay, is that showing correctly?
Yeah, if you can go to the next slide, please.
There you go.
Perfect. So what I want to do today is go kind of over the process that we took to create this first budget, tell you a little bit about our volume assumptions, give you a high level look at the revenue and expense budget. Got a whole slide on what we're calling the initiatives that really impact the EBITDA. A quarterly forecast, scratched the line item that says the foundation budget because I ended up not including that, but didn't realize till this morning, about 15 minutes before the meeting, that I had left that line item in. And then just talk a little bit about what I kind of see happening in 2023 from a financial plan. Next slide. Okay, so process overview, coming in and starting to really dig into this with 3 weeks meant we weren't going to do a budget down at a super detailed, you know, build it from the bottom level. That's future state for sure. But this year we had to do a high level budget using key performance metrics. And the main performance metric that's used is kind of a per adjusted patient day metric that I can apply against different volume projections to give the dollar amounts. We took October financials year to date, annualized them, and then started to make a few adjustments. Annualized them, just a very flat annualization, and applied 3% to the expenses. The one, knowing that expenses aren't all necessarily going to hit at 3%, but didn't have a lot of time to get real specific percentage increases. So thought some will come in a little less, some may come in a little higher. 3% is at least a safe starting place. Did some volume projections that I'll go through in a future slide, but with the executive leadership team just talking what we expected to happen with volume so that we could take that expense per adjusted patient day and apply it against the new volumes. Again, this one's done very high level, so there are some expenses that don't necessarily increase because volume has increased, some of the more fixed expenses. There's probably some opportunities where, we still have a little bit of capacity within the existing staffing that we have before we would need to add more staffing. But wanted to kind of build a case that we could at least substantiate how we got there for now while we learn more about the organization. So I created a base budget, which was basically just, volume increases and inflationary increases, and then started to layer on initiatives on top of that. Initiatives that would include not only removing non-recurring costs, but also adding new initiatives and new opportunities for us. Next slide. So here's some of our volume assumptions. Basically the bottom line of this is that we did a 2% increase for inpatient admissions and days, a 2% increase for outpatient volumes, 1% in the ED, and kind of a blended average of about 6.5% surgery, thinking that we would kind of ramp up and maybe see about 5% in the first couple quarters and closer to 8% by the last half of the year. Then on top of that, there are some initiatives that will add on a few, more days or more admissions. So generally, you can see that we're planning about 4,000, almost 4,100 admissions, which will, give us over 15,000 patient days and an average daily census of about 42. Looking at, this year we're projecting to end ED visits just a little over 31,000 and then, add about another 350 or so. Outpatient visits up in the 69,000 and almost close to 2,500 surgeries. Next slide, please. So this is what it looks like from a revenue standpoint. And what you're going to see here, and I have to admit that when I was doing my last minute review of this slide, I realized my footnote, I pulled in my total dollars from EBITDA increase in initiatives. But really, that bottom note should say that it was $23.7 million worth of new net revenue. What you'll see when I go through the initiative slide is that a lot of that comes from our payer contract increases, a couple of new initiatives, and then some market basket increases. But we're looking at trying to improve our collectible patient revenue from where we're projecting to end this year at about 13.2%, get that up to about 15%, And again, that is primarily going to come from better payer contracts. Not, you know, at this stage of the game, have not really projected that anything's going to be different with the payer mix that we have. So we're looking at, you know, finishing this year just shy of $130 million in net revenue. And by the time we layer things in next year, getting closer to $156 million. Next slide, please. The expenses, this is, you know, very formulaic in the fact that it is following that per adjusted patient day. And that does, you know, likely leave us some opportunity for some efficiencies. There are some that are layered in here. And when I go through the initiatives, you'll see them. You know, one that probably stands out just looking at this slide is that we're are driving to reduce our registry usage as much as we can there. And the other thing that's that really kind of shows in some of these slides is the treatment of the MPT leases and property taxes. The old way in the old company that was falling on the hospital, it included, you know, the lease payments, it included the interest on the old debt. That goes, has gone away. The interest on the old debt has gone away with the bankruptcy. The property tax and lease payments are moving from the hospital budget to the district budget. So that is why on that bottom line, you see a significant drop off in the MPT and other leases line. And so we really are projecting from the hospital itself to have about a $3.3 million EBITDA. And after the remaining other leases that we have, about $3.2 million in EBITDA. That will be, you know, offset by the district budget that includes the Coastal Health Partners and the district operations. Next slide, please. So here's kind of a high level view of the various initiatives that make up, you know, almost $30 million of improvement. We did go through and try to identify as much of that non-recurring cost that goes away now that we're out of bankruptcy. There's a few things where, you know, there's a tail that goes into next year. And so, you know, kind of prorated a few of those costs. The payer contracts right now, most of them are negotiated. A couple are still in the final stages, but, you know, coming in close to $12 million. Some of them, you know, really go, you know, most of them go into effect around 1-1, 2-1 in some cases. The Da Vinci robot, we've
can
got.
Can I just pause on the payer contracts a second? I wanted to bring something to your attention relating to the retroactivity from Kaiser.
Oh, yeah.
So because we're so, one of the things that, you know, we talked about earlier was cash. And there are two fairly large boluses of cash coming our way. But the retroactivity, which Kaiser has not yet processed, but the retroactivity, depending on when they process it, we're now 4 months in. So it's going to be between $2 and $3 million that they owe us for retroactivity. So that cash will just hit, that will be very useful cash. And then we have another government grant coming for just over two. So there's $5 million coming in cash that should make you sleep at night.
Thank you. So Da Vinci, we have a pro forma that says with the new robot, we'll add about 230 procedures and that has about a $900,000 EBITDA impact. CDM optimization, I actually, in my last changes on Friday or so, ratcheted that down to about 250,000, put some other things in elsewhere. So I still, the 29,820 is still a good number, just my slides a little bit off. But that's just making sure that various line items, we're not charging something less than we could get paid, not charging less than what Medicare would pay us. So that's some work that we're gonna be doing to make sure all of our procedures and things are priced appropriately. Cath lab to come online and have some new procedures. We have about a 5-year pro forma on that. So first year's a little lighter on the EBITDA, but it does improve over time. Some of our initiatives are increased expense. So in the case of the pro fees, we've got a new ICU group that'll probably be on by about April that will add about $500,000 to the annual expense. There's also want to implement the Vizient general purchasing organization or group purchasing organization contract that in itself will bring, probably about $750,000 in savings, as well as there'll be some work that we can do around sales tax exemption later in the year that could, net about $500,000. We've put in some money for merit increases, bonuses, and also open positions. Anytime there's always a lot of open positions, and we're doing pretty good filling positions, but we know, you have to net that out sometimes with the loss of people that do leave the organization. So I never tend to budget 100% of the open positions. Feeling like, we'll probably net about 50% of them, maybe better than that. But also realizing if we do better than that, we'll probably be able to even more substantially reduce registry. But there's been already a pretty substantial reduction. And you can actually see here, we're still planning on getting about $3 million out of registry when you compare it to what, 2022 is going to registry expense is going to be for the year. And then I've got a miscellaneous, primarily this is where the market basket updates are. There's some, some marketing fees that are in trying to join the California Hospital Association again. There's some fees for that, some contributions to the 401A plan. I'm getting used to that. And so in total, when you net these out, there's about $30 million that is what's going to move us into the positive for 2023. Next slide. So here's where I try to kind of forecast, how these initiatives are going to take shape and where we're going to see them so that we don't come in January and have a negative bottom line and think, oh my goodness, we're behind already. Generally, a lot of these initiatives will start up in the first quarter. Some of them will not start up until, Q2 or even into Q3. So in the first quarter, I'm projecting a, loss of about $1.4 million that starts to turn around by the second quarter, where we should start to see some favorable EBITDAs and, maybe finish the end of the second quarter, just slightly unfavorable, and then, get positive in the last half of the year. This is very high level estimates, only breaking things down at like quarter by quarter, not even month by month. So it won't look exactly like this, but this is, kind of what we will be looking at, especially as we come back with another forecast in March to say, all right, now we have 3 months of experience under our belt and what do we know now that would cause us to differ? Next slide, please. And this is just kind of my recap slide. You know, certainly we're going to be monitoring and reporting out on monthly performance. We have a pretty diligent daily management of cash flow now. And so that will continue. And every initiative and thing that we're doing will, you know, always have to be looking at that cash flow. Something that we might be saying we were going to do that would cause us to put dollars out the door, if we don't have them, it's going to stall that, you know, sort of disbursement. I mentioned quarterly updates. We will, you know, continue to look for initiatives, I think, especially on the revenue cycle side, opportunities to improve cash collections and you know, bring those into future forecasts. While we didn't build a budget at the department level, we are capturing actual performance at the department level. So we are, you know, going to develop and educate around department level reporting, manager accountability, getting, I'll start to, you know, get deeper into labor productivity and understanding where our opportunities are there. And all of this will build the groundwork so that we can do a detailed budget for next year. And I would hope that we will be starting that budget in the late summer months so that we have a good, you know, 4 months or so for our budget cycle to be presenting a 2024 budget this time next year. So that was my last slide. What can I answer for you?
Well, Julia, this is John. It looks good, and I can tell again a lot of work went into it, just with the ability of what you say, 3 weeks, maybe 3.5 weeks of experience under your belt. I don't really have any suggestions. I like the idea that we're going to watch it monthly, of course, and as a committee, we need to be sure we're able to tweak it. And because to me, the budget is simply a plan. It's not that, you know, you have to live to this directly. If you have to modify it, which I hope we will be able to do, then you modify it. I did have a question, and maybe you're going to tell us later. Is the capital budget going to come to us at a later date?
Yes, that is going to have to come to us at a later date. I think we've just started to, I think I've seen one view of it, but haven't had any conversations yet to really follow it.
Okay, and of course, that's predicated on the operational budget doing well. I mean, if it doesn't do yeah. well, and there's no capital to be spent. So
exactly.
We'll go hand in hand. Thank you again.
Sure. Thank you.
So Marcus, if I can, to keep this moving along, I think the expectation for us is to approve it in concept as a committee and recommend it to the board tomorrow night as the 2023 budget for board ratification so that we can start using it.
My apologies, I was on mute. yeah, absolutely. Julie, what level of, were you providing the same level of detail in the presentation? Or is that already in the board packet for tomorrow?
That is what has been provided. I can speak less to it if you want, or I'll take your lead on that, but was planning the same presentation.
No, it's an encouraging budget based on how this meeting started. You know, to finish the year with $3.2 million would, if net income, would be fantastic. Do you have a sense, you mentioned that the MPT lease is shifting to the district. What's the 2023 projected rate of the MPT lease? Do you have that available?
It's a monthly lease cost of $250,000. That was negotiated to be flat for the first five years.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it has an additional $70,000 or so associated with property insurance and taxes. So yeah. Our total payment to them is about $340 every month, but it's $250 and it won't go up.
Yeah. And then, you know, just to that point, you know, we're talking about, you know, $3.2 million, you know, positive on the hospital side.
Yep.
By the time you bring in, you know, Coastal Health Partners and then the district operations, which the bulk of it is these, you know, lease and insurance payments, you know, it is a, I'm looking at my notes here. Those two, the district and CHP is about a $6.6 million loss. So, you know, it puts us at overall at about a $3.5 million loss all in for the year.
Once again, coming from $30 million in the last 2 years is phenomenal.
A big swing.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I thought really deserved recognition was that, you know, this looks really tough and it is really tough. It is a phenomenal improvement over where we were. It's really quite something.
So Marcus, if I can suggest, just speaking without authority about the rest of the board members, since it is the first budget, I think we ought to ask Julie to go almost as deep as she did tonight or today with us, but not as deep. And keep in mind that there'll likely be questions from those board members. I'd like them to really buy into it and understand it fully, because it is the first budget. Oftentimes people will complain that they don't know enough about the finances, and I don't want us to fall into that kind of trap. So if it's okay with you, Marcus and Julie, something similar to what you gave us today, but maybe a little abbreviated. I think the slides are fine and just work from them. They're very clear. And I think most everybody could understand what they say. And that would be my suggestion if Marcus would approve.
Oh, without a doubt. I know we also often have members of the public and labor there present. So just know when we're talking about the registry that could cite some obvious concerns or questions.
Great.
I think Cecilia makes a good point, is that we and you should stress a couple of times during the meeting that the swing from 30 million to 3 million in the projected annual performance, you can't lose track of that. I mean, it's just phenomenal. So we need to let people leave the meeting knowing that budget is designed to accomplish that.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed message from what I really want people to remember how far we've come, and then, you know, coupling that with we have a ways to go. So that this is, you know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but, you know, I think our goal should be to look at, for example, some of the rating agency benchmarks around cash and liquidity, and you know, at least try and get ourselves to a triple B credit. You know, but we have a ways to go.
Yep. Also reminds me of John, when you're talking about capital in the MPT lease, I believe we have a 5-year first right of refusal to purchase the land and property in that lease.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was thinking about the district the other day, and obviously that would require a bond measure, and the election, it seems to me, would be the 2024. Four? Is it four or six?
Well,
I think it's six.
Four would be the next one that we
really, yeah. Right, but I think it would be six when you try and do the bond, because we can't purchase it until 5 years. But anyway, part of my reason for mentioning that, if it was six, is that in the next election, you know, the other thing the district can consider is to ask for the property tax apportionment, so that there would be a greater revenue cushion for this hospital. Most district hospitals do receive property tax revenue.
Right. And that's done by a vote of the voters again, has to go through.
Yeah, currently it requires a 2/3 vote, which is, it's tough. But there is actually a piece of legislation pending in Sacramento that would bring that down to 55%, which is much more doable.
Yeah, I know the school districts enjoy that 55%.
Yeah, they're trying to tack on the healthcare districts.
Yeah.
We just lost a bond measure in Cambria. The vote was 60. We needed 66. We got 63. It was painful, painful, painful.
I bet. How much was it for?
8 million. I mean, we're a little tiny district, so it was just wasn't that.
Yeah. Well, the strategy when that day comes has to be really well thought out. What's the impact of going out to ask the community for support at that time versus another time? And so I think what Marcus's point was, at least what I heard, is that it would be good for us to have all of our ducks in a row over the next couple of years so that when we do go back to the community, say, this is what we did.
Yep.
And now we need some more help to really make this your community hospital, including the land and building and equipment. So,
yeah.
Well, I think our action is to recommend for the Finance Committee to recommend approval of the 2023 calendar year budget to the board. Since it's just John and I, I'll move the recommendation.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We'll call for the vote.
Hi.
Creel?
Yes.
Pimentel?
Yes. Well done. Really well done report, Julie and Cecilia, Renee, and many other people behind the scenes, I'm sure.
Thank you. Group effort for sure.
Mm-hmm. So our next item is just to talk about our Finance Committee agenda, item three, which is our consideration of expanding this Finance Committee beyond John and myself to community members. I know we haven't talked about this, but Julie or Cecilia, do you have a starting point of this, or do you just wanted to have a conversation?
Well, recall that Stephen had an objective for each of these committees that we have participation both from the medical staff as well as our rank and file employees. Mm-hmm. May be something we want to consult with Stephen and Matco about what their recommendations might be.
Yeah, I'll just add to that I know that Stephen was, you know, mentioning like, you know, a couple physicians, couple of direct line staff type folks.
And I think there's some opportunities through the foundation lens of some community members who would be mm-hmm. Wonderful champions to have on board, understanding it at the Finance Committee level. So yeah, I see a healthy mix.
I'm trying to remember his name. There was a committee. There was a person who was very active in helping us raise money. His name mm-hmm. is Kirk, but I can't remember.
Yep. Kirk Schmidt.
Yeah.
He was, I mean, he has such a good understanding of finance, and he was able to bring our forecast to other community members and explain to them
mm-hmm.
how it worked. I was really impressed.
Yeah, so
well, we're going to need that kind of support in the future if we should go out for bond issue, parcel tax, or whatever the model might be. People from the community that are sitting in on committees making decisions as they talk to their peers and get out there to, you know, support whatever the action is. Just gives us a broader net to expand than just the five members of the board. I do think if we do it, it's going to take more time, and we need to be prepared for that. The meetings are going to be longer, but you know that's the price you're going to pay. Hopefully, the return on investment is that we'll have that better understanding by the community. When we do try to do something, or when we try to explain how well we are doing and the challenges that we've faced and the progress we're making.
I have to recall, John, in the bylaws, if we could have essentially two tiers of committee members, advisory members or non-voting, and then voting committee members. Like I wouldn't want to see us have more than five voting members, maybe even just three to start. I don't know what that right number is going to be. but it could be an opportunity to have other advisory members on this committee. And I just don't recall our bylaws. I know it's in the board packet for tomorrow, but we'll have to look at that. So maybe Julie, if you can, or Cecilia, or however the best works out, work with the executive team and start thinking about some names. And if there's a, it might be nice to come to our next committee meeting with a process of how we have candidates apply. I know we'll need to get an application and get their, effectively the resume, their CE to be submitted to be considered. So there might be us setting up a process in the next committee meeting of, here's how you apply to be a committee member, here's our applications are due by, and you know, then set a timetable that, you know, maybe we have a sitting committee members by, I don't know if it's April or May. This committee would recommend approval to the board, and then the board would appoint the members. So maybe you can huddle with executive staff, Julie, and just think of through some names. And what do you think as a process that isn't terribly staff intrusive right now? I just know how much is going on. I know you just focus on our finances, but this, it's important for us to start establishing this. That's my thoughts. John, I don't know if you have thoughts to process.
I think what you just recommended would be a good process to start with.
John, what do you think about our committee size? I mean, you've probably been on a lot of, worked with a lot of hospital committees. I'm thinking no more than 5 voting members. Do you have any initial thoughts on that?
I just put myself on mute. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, good. I think I put myself on mute. As you probably can tell, I prefer smaller committees just because of the time involved and getting very succinct. But I think we did make a commitment to involve the community in this process. And so we've already made a pledge to do that. And so we're going to honor it. But still, with that in mind, the smaller the better. Right. So I think, you know, your suggestion that we ask staff to come up, maybe the 2-tiered system would be a good one, sort of a voting level and a advisory participation level would be a good way to go.
All right. Cecilia, do you have any thoughts on your experience working with finance committees or what you might want to think about?
Yeah, it may be different here, but I've actually found it difficult to get people to commit to participating in some of these things. It's not, you know, particularly if you think about members of the medical staff, it's, you know, it's really valuable time, and finance is not typically something that they engage in. So I don't think you're going to have a long line of people trying to get on this committee. If anything, you just want to pick a handful of the right people.
Thank you.
That's a good point. I think more people would be interested in being on the committee for planning and strategy versus finance. So,
I don't know why. I find it fascinating.
thank God there's people like you and Julie out there, because most don't.
I mean, just in my doing some door-to-door stuff that I had to do this last November, I ran into 7 or 8 people who all had some interest in participating at the finance committee level. So these are all community members. And so I think we're going to have this, you know, we may get surprised by how much interest there might be from a community member. So maybe our framework is going to be 2 board, 1 community member, 1 staff, and then we'll figure out the 5th. We'll probably have to have some structure similar to that. And you're right.
That I think sounds it's a nice mix. Staff. Yeah.
Or maybe it's 2 community members. I don't know what the right buy-in is going to be, but like I said, maybe we can discuss this at our next meeting and then bring it to the board as a concept and get feedback.
Okay.
All right. There's no action required. I think this is just an informational item. There are no changes to the meeting, so I think we're at adjournment. Any final questions, comments, anything I missed? Other than deep appreciation to putting this together during a busy time, holiday season and all. And I apologize I've been saying this a lot lately. I'm feeling more stable, but recently I'm traveling and doing a lot of things, so it's been hard to keep track of things. So I appreciate how prepared you were for this meeting. This really well done for our first meeting.
Yes, good job. Good job.
Julie was just amazing. I mean, really have to say, probably a really good way to get absorbed in what's going on at the hospital, but yeah. It just reinforced for me how lucky we are to have. Yeah.
The staff reports were really well done. The presentations were really well done. So thank you all. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yep.
Look forward to it.
Happy to have you. So we'll see you all tomorrow night at 5.
Yep.
That's right.
All right. Okay. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye.